Welcome back to another edition of Streamtime Sports. I'm your host, Nick Meacham, CEO at SportsPro, and thrilled to be back with you after a few intense days following the action at Masters Golf. Now, a couple of things really stuck out with me as I tried my hardest to dodge daddy duties to take in the event. Now, let's caveat that I wouldn't really classify myself as a golfer these days, but definitely used to be and followed the sport passionately as a kid and only have really stopped playing of late as I struggled with time commitments. But let's say I have a light interest in the sport, but rarely time to tune in except between some of the majors if I stumble across it, which surprisingly, the Golf Channel is one of the top 10 key sports channels available here in Jamaica, despite the fact there isn't that many courses. But anyway, I digress a little. I thought the event itself is a really impressive piece of coverage for those that do follow it. I know in the UK, a lot of friends and colleagues really get into the Masters, even if they aren't major golf fans. I have to say I was impressed with the coverage of the event, including its app that's built by, I think it's tech giant IBM. And the app really acts as a nice interactive tool when you're watching the event, a nice companion. But it also has the right balance of access to non-live highlights and other content during the event, even if you aren't around to tune into it. But what was really surprising about the event from a broadcast perspective was the fact that nothing's really changed over the years other than perhaps extra data points like ball speed and TrackMan on the screen. And also one of the things that kept getting brought up in the broadcast was really the LIV Golf PGA Tour issue, which I was a bit uncomfortable with the softly negative tones that kept being displayed by the commentators about the fact that some of the players were no longer invisible anymore because of their lack of exposure in LIV Golf. Now, that was all very interesting. I also can't believe that, I don't know if everyone's heard this, but there's so much money that is actually left on the table by the Masters when it comes to media rights. I mean, fun fact for you, if you didn't know already, they give it away free to CBS in return for an interesting array of extra controls on the broadcast and content. They put in, for example, only 4 minutes of ad spots available per hour for CBS to sell, when usually the load is around, I think, 10 to 15 minutes. They also have interesting rules with the broadcasters where they can't talk about attendees or fans, but they have to call all the people that are attending the event as patrons when they're talking about them during the broadcast. And interestingly, none of the broadcasters can talk about the prize purse, which was a ridiculous $18 million for the entire event. I think the winner, Scottie Scheffler, won something like 3.6 alone. Now, estimates range that if they did sell their media rights to the highest bidder, they could get something between $1 to $200 million a year just for those rights. But hey, it doesn't always pay to have control, or in this case, it always pays to have control if you can afford to. Outside of the event, there's constant coverage about the fact that they still run the same prices they've run for decades, with sandwiches selling it for as little as $1.50 if egg and salad sandwiches are your type of thing. Now, they're personally not my thing, but this event also has an interesting layer to it, which only merchandise is available on site during the 4 days. Apparently, that brings in a reported $60 to $70 million per year. And look, whilst they might be keeping these prices low for some sort of noble reason, let's be clear that this event is an incredible sporting moment once in a year, but it's not an event built on serving the younger generation or Gen Z fans. It's a status thing for the top money earners in the world. In fact, younger creative groups are the ones really bringing golf to the masses and have to be the ones celebrated here. Not an event like the Masters, who brings in something like, I think I saw the number of 1,500 private jets that weekend arriving at the nearest airport for the event to attend. And let's put that in perspective, that LIV Golf allowing shorts to be worn in a tournament was a huge revelation, let alone the change in format they achieved. The sport of golf needs to sort of sort out this merger fast and need to jump on the timing of the fact that there's so many top players under the age of 35 right now, including, I think it's something like the top five players leading in the final round of the Masters this weekend. The Masters is clearly about status, but of a very different era of sports fan. and not the one sports needs to be worried about, and that's fans from Gen Z or younger. But fear not, golf, because we might have some ideas and insights just for you. Last month, I ran a pretty awesome panel on stage at Sports Pro New York with three of the leading voices around reaching younger sports fans. I was joined by Katie Amelia, who's the Vice President of Programming for Bleacher Report, Harry Sarma, who's the Global Head of Sports for TikTok, Becky Kimbrough, who's a Senior Vice President of Brand Engagement for the San Antonio Spurs. Now, there's a nice range of content in there about stats-backed misconceptions around Gen Z, and how on earth do you leverage a once-in-a-lifetime athlete joining your ranks? And yes, we're talking about Victor Wembanyama. We also covered how to build a media offering around creators and athletes, and whether it's worth trying to push fans to your own platforms or just prioritize being where they are. And of course, let's not forget the most important word in sports business, monetization. Honestly, I think this is one of my favorite panels I've done. So please do take a listen and see if you can take away as much as I did from it. And before you go anywhere, I will be in London next week for Sports Pro Live, which is on the 23rd and 24th of April, right in the heart of London at the Kia Oval, the cricket ground for those that aren't familiar with it. So if you're about, please drop me a line as I would love to connect with you across the event. I'll also be running a live recording of the podcast on day one of the event in the afternoon, so keep an eye out for that on the agenda. And look, really excited to get back to London after 6 months away. But right, that's enough of a lead-in. Without any further ado, it's time for me to hand over to me speaking with some gurus about Gen Z. We've got Harry Sarma from TikTok. We've got Becky Kimbrough from the San Antonio Spurs and Katie O'Melia from Bleacher Report. So very different opinions and angles into this, both platforms and from the sports property. So the best of the best to give us a take on these things. But let's start with the question. So firstly, what's one stat or insight that characterizes a Gen Z sports fan? Starting with you, Katie.
I think the percentage of Gen Z fans who get their sports content from social media. I think one example is last week with all the moves in the NFL, there was someone who commented on an animation we did of Kirk Cousins with his move to Atlanta, who was like, I didn't even know this happened. So it was interesting that it's both like serving that entertaining content in the way we packaged it for TikTok, but also newsworthy of he's now on a new team.
Becky.
And I'll build on that by saying the stat I'd like to share is 25%, only 25% of Gen Zers engage with live sport. So only 25% come to games, only 25% watch live broadcast. And I think it's just another example of the way that Gen Z is sort of disrupting our traditional institutions, and which is a good thing for all of us to think more creatively.
Especially when the players are Gen Z.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah. Harish.
Yeah, it's actually interesting when Gen Z becomes the representative group, right? And that's sort of the shift we're seeing, not just on the consumption side, but as you said, the athletes are really like the core, and they're all Gen Z, in fact, and the vast majority of them, and then now trending to Gen Alpha soon. And if you think about what we are seeing on our side, and you've had two references already, they are not restrained by traditional frameworks, right? So this idea of, and this has happened, and I don't know if there's a few people who would recognize this, but you might be scrolling through TikTok and then realize that something had happened in the world of sports because it's now being actively discussed on the platform. And then you say, oh, wait a minute, I don't even know that happened. Let me go catch up now. Let me find the highlight. Let me find something about it because I didn't even know it happened because so much is happening in the world of sport. So for the very first time, the aggregator component is actually coming through social, and it's something that is very natural to this group.
So what's one stat or insight that demystifies the notion that Gen Z have a short attention span? Again, now let's go with you, Katie.
Almost 500 million views to the series Who Did I Marry? Or Who the F Did I Marry? From Marisa Tisa. For anyone who's not familiar, it was someone who learned all of this stuff about her husband. You can also find digests of it. Those now exist. But it was 50 10-minute long episodes of her explaining her actually finding out about what her husband's background was. And I think that that's a great example of that's an incredible amount of content that was consumed by so many people, and the series kind of like took off. And I think that that just if you then apply that to sports, it's basically taking the concept of compelling content is still sticky. It still resonates. It's both the subject matter meeting format now, where I think in the past, it was just put the subject matter on a specific format that people are used to consuming in television, and it will do well. Now it's trying to take that subject matter and package it in a way that's native to the way that people are consuming the content on that specific platform. So I think a great example of that on the Bleacher Report side is Shaq Cam. So for anyone who's not familiar with that, during All-Star Weekend this past year in the dunk contest, we had Shaq fitted with an actual like live camera, and we live streamed Shaq experiencing the dunk contest. It was trending on YouTube, got millions of views, did incredibly well in the Bleacher Report app. So I think it's just showing that if you put the right content out there and if you package it in a way that makes sense for that platform, still gonna land and resonate.
Harish, jumping to you there.
Yeah, I'd say from my side, it's much more a question of what is compelling about the content that keeps the consumer on. And I'd say this, I guess this assertion that Gen Z have a lower attention span, as a non-Gen Zer, I take issue with it. And the reason I take issue with it is because ultimately the plethora of optionality that exists today for the consumer has never existed ever, especially as a sports fan. And so I would actually hazard to guess every single person in this room while they're watching live sport is doing something else on their phone or something else. Like they're not really committed to the long form like version of that in whatever format that is. And that's not, I don't think that actually takes away from the experience. I think some will say it does, but I think you're sort of making a decision that given whatever's happening, there's a break in play, there's a lull in the game, you now want to either learn more because of what you've seen, you're learning about players like Victor, and I'm sure like we'd love to hear how that's transitioning and for the Spurs, but like you may have learned something about this individual because of what they did on the court, but you want to learn way more about them, and you can really only do that through this other medium. So to me, it's actually just optionality and how compelling the content is.
And it comes down to almost the redefinition of what a second screen is these days.
Correct.
Becky, for you, what demystifies a Gen Z?
I think it's exactly what these two brilliant humans have said. I think, you know, a stat that I read is that Gen Z spends more than 4 hours a day on social media. So there's not a lack of attention. I think there's a lack of quality Gen Z content. And I think the Who the F Did I Marry series was a really good just case study in how Gen Z does appreciate story. And what they're really looking for is to be captivated. And as a rights holder, that's what we're always trying to do is captivate our audience in the most interesting way.
Okay, so what's one stat or insight that amplifies the importance of prioritizing Gen Z fans over the other audience segments? Harish, start with you.
So for me, I'd say, and again, I think you mentioned the 25% stat. It's interesting. When I was at the NBA, we used to say that less than 1% of actual fans show up in the arena, right? So if you think about what does fan development look like and what it was in previous times, it used to be you would go to the game with someone who took you to the game, and that was your introduction to the game. If you were in England, for example, it would be your local team, and that would be sort of how you'd build a kinship. If that stat holds, which I think it does, then the reality is that fan development is not happening at all in that structure. And so how are fans being birthed? And so if Gen Z are not your focus, then I'm asking a much bigger question, right? So I think the answers we've seen are the mediums are where they are right now, where they're spending all their time, and ultimately how they're being converted into fans is through these experiences. So I mean, I don't think it's they're more important. I think it's how are you thinking about your fan development?
Katie.
And I think building on what both of you have said, I think the amount of time that they're spending just creates more opportunity for you to spend time with them. And it's are you doing the right things when they're spending those 4 hours on social media to be reaching them in those moments?
Becky?
Yeah, the other interesting thing about Gen Z, at least from my perspective, you talked about the model of play, watch, go, and the sort of generational fandom being disrupted. This is also a very, very diverse population, and I think for that reason, it's also imperative that anybody looks at their methods of sort of targeting and their levels of authenticity when they're kind of building their brand.
So keeping a quick fire, what's one piece of content that you've seen or produced that was a massive hit to the Gen Z when it was published? Maybe Becky, start with you.
Yeah, so I'm actually not going to talk about Wemby here. We're going to save that for a little later down the road. But we recently published a highlight of one of our players, Sandro Mamukelishvili, standing underneath the basket during shoot around, heaving the basketball over his head and making a full court shot from behind his back. And that was the most watched content that we've ever published on TikTok. And I think it's just a symbol that, again, Gen Z is here to be entertained and they want to see, you know, sort of these incredible feats. And that one was big for us.
Katie?
Another one that was big for us, it's a series really. We call it Courtside Correspondent, but we can apply it to ringside. We've done it at baseball games. And what the execution is it basically puts someone who is relevant in either sports, pop culture. We had Lil Wayne at a basketball game. So we send like Lil Wayne as an example, courtside to a game, a basketball game. And then we film in a very like innovative way. I think our content team is so creative and so really just like pushing the boundaries with what we can do. And so using a long lens, capture what is the conversation of Lil Wayne with his son, Lil Wayne with the different players. We had Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders at a basketball game. And we, through that mechanism, got Travis saying hello to LeBron. And like, that's the thing you dream up when you're talking like creatively about like, what's the best version of this execution? And then what happens is that content looks so organic because it is organic, but we're basically creating the opportunity for that to happen and then pushing it out across our platforms in a way that then can take off with a Gen Z audience.
Harish?
Yeah, I'll go in slightly different direction. I think the more obvious things that would trend on TikTok are these big moments that you would assume, right? Like the big highlights, the big whatever sporting achievements, and those absolutely have done so. I think what has been really interesting to see is something like what CBS has been doing with Golazo and around the Champions League coverage, specifically around what their hosts are talking about. There's no actual footage at all. The banter that's just between those hosts, I mean, some of the comments that we have seen, which is really interesting, is when you say, Jamie Carragher on Golazo is a different person than the person he is when he's in the UK, when he's actually, and so this is obviously like an intentional thing, but what's really interesting is how that's manifesting on TikTok, because now there's a secondary conversation that's taking place about the interpersonal, you know, conversations that are taking place, whether they have a favorite host, whether that host now is getting, you know, their fair share of banter, or are they not? And it's so interesting to see that none of those things have anything to do with rights. None of those things have anything to do with the traditional things that I would say hold people back when they say, well, I don't have access to music. I don't have access to footage. I don't have access to X, Y, and Z. Well, guess what? Like, this show by itself is astounding. And so I bring that up, and again, there's a number of other partners that I would call out that are doing versions of this, but I would say that's the one that sort of stands out to me, because it's so evident, because even that content now has traveled outside of the US and now is all over the world, specifically in the UK, which I think is really hilarious, because there's other coverage there that is very, very, I would say, different than what you would expect.
Yeah, I can't get away from that. It keeps popping up. The algorithm is serving me well. What's one thing you're still trying to work out about a Gen Z audience? Becky?
Yeah, I think this is a fairly obvious one for any team folks in the room, but there is still, I think, a question about how do we take this new model where Gen Zers are generally coming into their fandom via athlete personalities and create affinity towards the brands that we all own and manage. And I think a lot of that boils down to, we have to approach Gen Z in a very authentic way. This generation, because, you know, they've been raised with cell phones in their hands, they've had access to the world from the jump, it's this, they sort of take a verify then trust approach. So showing up as an authentic brand, I think, is critical in building that affinity, because past generations were trust and verify. And that model has changed as well.
Katie?
Appointment viewing. In a world of algorithms, it's very hard to get someone to see a piece of content at a very specific time. So how do you navigate that across platforms? I think in the Bleacher Report app, you have the beauty of people having selected, like, this is what I'm interested in. So we have the ability to send push notifications based on that news. So I'm a Yankees fan. Someone gets traded for the Yankees. I will get that news. On a platform where it's more algorithmically driven and where you have scale there, how do you notify your audience or people even beyond your audience about something happening at a very specific time? And I think that's something that we're continually experimenting with. One example is on YouTube, leveraging shorts to then use that shorts content. There ways that you can just use the tools within shorts to then push to the full episode. So trying to leverage the different tools within other platforms where we don't control our destiny and we don't have stated interests given by our user base to then drive people throughout like the full content funnel of maybe it is starting with the very short bite-sized piece of content. They like that piece of content. You get to funnel them into the longer form piece of the content. Once they consume the longer form piece of content, you know, you could see this at a very specific time in the Bleacher Report app at 12 o'clock every Wednesday. So it's trying to use that full funnel of both content type to then drive appointment viewership.
So really good point around the app. And we've talked a lot mainly about social media activity through this conversation so far. So what about the prospect of the challenge, the tension point between driving audiences to a platform, to an app, versus being where they are? So serving more and more great content on a platform like TikTok, or do you want to get them to the Spurs app, the Bleacher Report app, et cetera? Harish, what's your view? Obviously, it might be slightly biased on this one, but do you feel like it really is just about being where they are, or do you think there is a balance to that?
There's absolutely a balance. And actually, you'll be surprised that I actually feel that it's much more aligned with the goals of every one of our publisher partners. As an example, TikTok cannot be all things to all fans. It doesn't really make sense. Like, we have a role to play, which is on the discovery side, a really big role to play on the discovery side. I would argue we're really top of funnel. And in many ways, your core fans are going to know where to find you. There's no world in which your core fan is discovering you through TikTok. Like, I don't think that's real. But the vast majority of your casual and non-fans don't actually know, my guess is, that you exist or your own exists. And so how do you get them there? I think that's the journey, right? And Katie, you were talking about this earlier, which is like that like funnel that you create. I think people are too focused on, if I start here, how quickly do I convert them into a fan? Versus the journey of converting a fan can take a long time. But if you are really methodical and thoughtful about it, you actually are going to start in a place, ideally on TikTok, where you're going to find a lot of this stuff. And it's going to be very innocuous because you're going to either be somebody who likes celebrity content, or somebody who likes fashion content, or somebody who likes sport adjacent content. And that sort of gets you interested. Then you get interested in a player like Victor because of whatever it is, his profile, his story, his background, his ethnicity, it could be anything. And then you start to get sort of roped in. At the right time, that fan is sort of going to say, wait a minute, the Spurs are on, and they're on Turner, and I can't wait to figure out, or Bleacher, and I can figure out like how I can watch this. And so then you have like a funnel in, and it's very natural. It's not forced. And so from a TikTok, I'd say, platform perspective, we sort of see ourselves as that conduit that helps you sort of engender that interest and then ultimately get you there at the right time.
And then hand it over to Becky. So you've got them all engaged on TikTok. I mean, where's the balance there for you?
Yeah, and I'm so glad that someone from the platform side, Harish, said that it takes time to convert people and build fandom, because that, on the property side, I think we all need to continue, like, get it tattooed on your forehead. Building fandom takes time. And I think the other piece of that is once they've entered into the first-party ecosystem, it's building value. So it's really understanding what drives value for this fan and how is that different than sort of previous generations of fans. But we can't just have people, you know, engage with the brand on TikTok and discover the brand and, you know, build more affinity in that way and then come over to the first party platform and just think that they're going to give all of their information to us. Like, we have to have some sort of value exchange there before that happens.
Before you jump in, Katie, just in terms of then driving return on building an audience at scale on a platform, let's say like TikTok, where is that value tangibly created for the business? Is it just audience and we'll work it out? Is there a, okay, first party data is worth X to us as a business, that's why we need to drive it? Or just the commercial opportunities that come with having a scaled audience for commercial partners?
Yeah, generally the latter at this point. I do think, you know, properties are still working through getting a little bit more sophisticated on articulating that exact value for all of the first party data that we have. And I think there's the obvious, you purchase a ticket. Okay, well, tickets are limited. You know, our venues are not as big as our social footprint and our digital footprint. But then there's, you know, lots of ways for properties to monetize those audiences via retail, via partnerships, and, you know, lots of other ways.
Katie, to you there. What's the balancing point?
Yeah, I think Becky touched on it really well with talking about value, and it's about understanding what is the value proposition of each platform to the fan. So, and not trying to just replicate and trying to differentiate in terms of how you're showing up for fans. So in the Bleacher Report app, value proposition, our alerts are very fast. You follow the specific teams that you want. So it's kind of you're choosing your own destiny. And then a way that we have been working to enhance the fan experience is a live streaming platform where something big happens with your team. You can go into our app and see someone talking about that at any given moment. So last week, really big week in the NFL. It was our best week since the NFL draft last year, which is like Christmas for our app user base, but which is really telling. Like, when I'm talking about the different value propositions, if you think about Bleacher Report and the Bleacher Report app and stats and scores and news and rumors about who's going where, that is what the NFL draft is made for. So that's where we see massive, massive amounts of audience sitting with us and seeing our live stream that's keeping them up to date on everything that's happening with the NFL draft. So it's really taking that nugget and that insight of like, okay, that's been Christmas for us for years. How can we extrapolate and provide something of value to sports fans in a continual way that when you have NFL free agency, that is something where we have live streams consistently going throughout the app. So it's, you don't need to be just a general NFL fan. You can find your pocket of fandom and you can find a stream that's specifically talking about the Steelers, or you can find a stream that's specifically talking about the Falcons. So it's really trying to lean into that differentiated value proposition that they may not be getting from a platform.
So just on that point, Katie, do you have to take more of an events-based approach or a moments-based approach in how you're looking more longer term? So the activity between those big tempo Christmas moments, let's call them, are you having to say, okay, we're doing all these things now to build up to that point, so when it's time that everyone wants to come to the platform, we're ready to really maximize and get those extra couple percentage points of growth because we put all the effort in beforehand versus trying to be always on?
Exactly. And I think it's then building repeatable habits from that for when we get to that always on stage.
Now we've seen, obviously, everyone has been following, no doubt, the change in behavior over the last, I don't know how many years now, but the number of years to that athlete first, creator first, influencer first consumption we're seeing. And a lot of the examples we've talked about here are very squarely built around individuals, you know, individuals or first person type content. Are you seeing, Katie, back to you for a second here, are you seeing any definitive changes in consumption on your platform as you've tried to change and align more with person-led in your content?
Totally. One of the things that we've really been investing in strategically is giving athletes a voice and giving athletes a platform. So one example is our show with Mookie Betts. We came back for season 2 last week. He had an episode with Dansby Swanson.
And I think that's a great example of, number one, Mookie is just an incredibly, incredibly talented interviewer. It's so natural. It's really, really just special to see that come to life. And talking with these different people in the baseball space, which they may not have historically have had that platform to speak. And I had always known Dansby Swanson as like, oh, Mal Pugh's husband. And now from after watching the episode with Mookie, it just gives you so much more insight into that athlete and into that athlete's story. And I think that the way that we need to approach it strategically, like going full circle to how we talked about packaging content and the way the different platforms are leveraged, is that starts with a live stream in the Bleacher Report app. And then we put that into different clip outs. So within the app, you don't need to get like super fancy with it. It's just, here's the clip of what actually happened. But then by the time it gets to a TikTok or a YouTube short, it's taking that small specific moment of him talking about why Kobe's inspirational to him and trying to figure out what are those little glimmers of a theme that I think would make this transcendent to an audience beyond someone who just cares about baseball or who might have already known who Mookie Betts is. So that's really the challenge for us of like, as we are working with these athletes and giving them a voice and a platform, how do we extend the potential audience of that piece of content using the different levers at our disposal?
So maximizing the piece of content itself, right?
Yes, exactly.
Now, Becky, to you, talk about athletes. You've had a pretty well-known athlete talked about a lot in the media, pretty much all over the world, from the probably a year before you even got to actually start working with him. So just talk a little bit about the experience of having Victor Wembanyama as part of the team and what you've had to do to maximize the opportunity and maybe even some of the challenges along the way.
Yeah,
probably could spend
sure.
about half an hour talking about that probably.
Yeah, Wemby could be his own conference, really. Yeah. And maybe I'm a little biased, but I do think he's just an absolutely incredible, obviously his athletic accomplishments, but as a human being, he's just an incredible person. It's interesting on the team side because, especially for the Spurs, we are always a team that will prioritize team. We are not a team that talks about individuals. And so this was a really interesting sort of landscape for us to welcome this absolute superstar into. So we have been very thoughtful about trying to balance the amount of content from Victor that we're putting out on our channels to make sure that we are prioritizing the entire team. I will say, given that this is a Gen Z focused panel, and Victor is a fresh 20 years old, when we drafted Victor, we saw an 8x increase in followers from a 24-hour period year over year looking at the draft from the prior year. And the biggest gains that we made in that follower growth was on TikTok. And since then, we have seen incredible engagement in all of the clips that do feature Victor. I mean, I'm certain everyone in the room knows that his dunk on New Year's Eve against Boston is the NBA's most viewed clip of all time. So it's really wild just to think about the impact of one individual on our content.
And how much it transfers to the team, right? The exposure, the awareness. But your point before, you made a really interesting point about this, right? About that, and I'm conscious of time. We will try and get one or two questions from the audience in after this, but how do you make sure that all this hysteria, this excitement, whatever you want to call it, around an athlete, a transcendent athlete and talent like him, does make it that someone becomes a fan of the club and not just a fan of the athlete? Because we are seeing a lot of activity where dozens of examples where fans just follow these top stars rather than becoming a true fan. So how do you try and hold on to those?
Yeah, I think for us, we go back to focusing on who we are authentically as a brand. And I think one of the nice things, we're very fortunate that we prioritize social impact as a brand and as an organization. And serving our community is incredibly important to the Spurs and always has been. And I think that really aligns well with the values that Gen Z bring into the equation. They are incredibly focused on equity and inclusion and belonging. And that's also something that as an organization, we prioritize and we value. So my goal is to help the next generation of fans understand that while they may be interested in us because of an athlete, we actually do have a lot more to offer our fans than just amazing highlights.
And ultimately, as we've said before, you can't shortcut fandom. So you can't just make someone a fan of the Spurs instantly just because of one guy's just popped turned up all of a sudden. So, right, do we have any questions for the audience? Yep, go for it.
Hi, Ken Golden from BMG Music. I was just wondering, Given over the last few years, we've seen a huge transition from active fan bases watching the games themselves, and this is across multitudes of sports, to being more involved in the transactional aspects of sports, you know, a lot of the off-season stuff, the free agency stuff. And that you see that happening not just within the confines of the NBA, but you'll see it in the NFL and NHL and MLS. And I was wondering if any of you, and I'm especially interested in hearing what Becky has to say about it being representing of a team, if you've seen any types of content or types of media that have drawn fans, whether they be casual or non-existent or avid fans, from, you know, the transactional aspects of sports back into actually watching games and watching gameplay and being involved in the actual day-to-day aspects of what's happening in a season, rather than just who's getting signed or who's going to be the next free agent or where the draft is going to fall.
That's a really good question. And I'll say on the team and property side of things, we don't dabble in the business of speculation about who's going where, although I think that's an extraordinarily fun part of fandom. I mean, for my money, the NBA is the best reality show ever. And I think what we do then is we come in once an athlete has landed somewhere and we try to tell the story. We try to help fans in our market and our fans understand who that person is and try to generate interest in who they are before they ever put the uniform on.
So one super quick question, because we are out of time from myself, which we haven't dug into too much. We've talked about a lot about audience and scaling and engagement. Quick answers from all of you on how do you turn that into good old hard cash. Katie?
I think you create content that doesn't look sponsored and then sponsor it.
I'll say two things. One, make better retail, like find designers to collaborate with. Retail is an extraordinarily amazing way to build the brand. And two, create the things that Gen Z want to engage with. So quick example of that, last year we celebrated our 50th anniversary and we played a game in the Alamo Dome, which was originally built for football. So we opened up the entire place and had a crowd of over 68,000 people in the building and saw an increase, a 10% increase in Gen Z attendees. So understanding that they build their social capital by having their digital receipts to prove that they were there, create the places that they want to be.
Couldn't have said it better than these ladies. They articulated the core challenge, which is there's no silver bullet, so stop looking for a silver bullet. The answer is it's a basket. It's a combination of branded content that doesn't look branded. It's a combination of affiliate-based revenue tied to e-commerce. It could be ticketing. It could be a host of things. There's also the live gifting world, which exists, has existed for a while, and also exists on social platforms as well. So there's a bunch of ways to do it.
Well, lots of answers, hopefully, for you all on how to tackle the Gen Z cracking the code. I've certainly taken a lot from it. So a big thank you to our panelists, Katie, Becky, and Harish. Thank you, everyone.
Before you go, myself and Nick would just like to thank you for tuning into this episode of Stream Time. If you found the episode insightful, please make sure you like and subscribe on whichever platform you listen to. As a growing podcast, we'd greatly appreciate your support in sharing or writing a review. Ultimately, we want this podcast to not only entertain you, but also hopefully help you navigate the digital sports landscape. If you have any feedback on previous episodes or any topics and speakers you'd like to hear from in the future, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can find myself and Nick Meacham on LinkedIn or on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @SportsProChris1. Nick can be found @SportsProNick. Of course, if you want to stay fully up to date on the sports business news cycle, please make sure to visit the Sports Pro Media website or sign up to one of our several newsletters to make sure you don't miss anything. Once again, thank you, and we look forward to you joining us next week on the Streamtime Podcast.